God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. This morning's spiritual panorama opens on Matthew's version of the events leading to the birth of Jesus. And for most of us, our sense of the Nativity emerges from merging Luke and Matthew together to give us the typical manger scene depicted in countless churches and nativity plays. In doing so, we miss the significance of each evangelist's distinctive and strikingly different portrayal of events surrounding Jesus' birth. Luke's focus is on Mary. His birth narrative is Mary's story, depicting the birth taking place in primitive farmyard conditions, surrounded by sheep and cattle and witnessed by common shepherds, representative of those on the margins of society. And of course, let's not forget the angel. Matthew's version of events gives us Joseph's story, the story of Jesus' birth told from Joseph's perspective. No manger, no shepherds, no cattle, no sheep. A birth witnessed not by common people, but by foreign emissaries in the persons of the three magi, representatives of the wider world's homage to the infant king of the Jews. Matthew's angel appears not to Mary, but to Joseph in a dream. Now, having located Jesus' identity within the long genealogy stretching back through Jewish mythological time to Abraham, Matthew's intensely Jewish story places Jesus' birth within the turbulent political context of first century Palestine. Here we have all the ingredients of a tense political drama. A brutal ruler in Herod the Great, the puppet of the Roman occupation, whose murderous intent drives the Holy Family into exile as political asylum seekers. The Holy Family escapes, but every other year-old male born in the region of Bethlehem is slaughtered by Herod, who, alerted by the indiscretion of the Magi, endeavors to neutralize Isaiah's prophecy of the birth of a rival king. Now, Matthew's narrative is a very rich one. It sets the birth of Jesus within a political context that is intimately familiar to us today, as we live in a world where literally millions of fathers and mothers with young children are daily forced to undertake the perils and dangers as refugees escaping in fear for their lives. Perhaps the greatest significance to be drawn from Matthew's birth narrative for us today lies in an exploration of the political and humanitarian themes buried within his version of events. And perhaps this is a fruitful exploration kept for another time, maybe even a Christmas Eve sermon. But today I want to focus on Matthew's approach to Jesus' story as one that is very much within the Jewish patriarchal worldview. Another way of thinking about the patriarchal worldview is that it's the worldview through the perspective always of the men in charge. Richard Swanson is a delightfully provocative biblical commentator. He's coined a delicious name for the patriarchal scriptural voice. He calls it the voice of the holy baritones. my not infrequent uneasiness with Matthew's voice is that at times he seems to me to epitomize the role of section leader in the holy baritone chorus. Matthew, having spent the first 17 verses of his 25-verse first chapter establishing Jesus' identity at the heart of the Jewish patriarchal transmission, finally gets around to telling us about Jesus' birth at verse 18. And he does it in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found to be with child. In a society with strictly no sex before marriage taboos, a central convention of all patriarchal societies, Matthew chooses to introduce the birth of Jesus by telling us that Mary was found with child. Now, was found to be is a grammatical structure known as the divine passive. It's a way of telling us that so-and-so happened without telling us how it happened. It was a device used by the Hebrew writers of showing that something had happened that was actually the hand of God without needing to refer to the name that could not be written or spoken. Matthew does make clear that the hidden hand of God is in play here. But unlike Luke's portrayal of a direct encounter between Mary and Gabriel, leaving Mary with the chief agency in her decision-making, the thrust of Matthew's narrative is that Mary's pregnancy has been discovered in the sense of shamelessly exposed. But we're not told by whom it has been exposed. Matthew clearly sees Mary as having no agency, reserving all decisions to Joseph. Now, Matthew presents Joseph in a predicament. His reputation, through no fault of his own, is endangered by this turn of events. His solution is to become resolved to quietly break off the engagement. Ah, what a mensch. And here's my problem with Matthew's Joseph-focused version of events. In a religious society with draconian laws against sex before marriage, the risk of public disgrace relates not to Mary, but rather to Joseph's predicament. His is the fear of being publicly disgraced. Why do I draw that conclusion? Because if the truth got out, the risk to Mary was not public disgrace, but of being stoned to death, in the first instance by her father. And if he could not bring himself to do the dastardly deed, then at least by another male relative, an uncle or a brother or a cousin, always conveniently waiting in the wings. The reality of honor killing is a nasty detail that the holy baritone voice skips over by silence. So how is Joseph to be extricated from the prospect of public disgrace? Matthew rescues him through an angel appearing to him in a dream, telling him not to be afraid. Aha, afraid. Afraid of what, if not public disgrace? The angel instructs Joseph to go through with the marriage because it is really God who has caused Mary's pregnancy. And on waking, with his mind now reassured against the fear of social opprobrium, he does as the angel commanded him to do. Now, we might expect Matthew to end his chapter here. What better place to end the chapter than with the Honorable Joseph marrying the pregnant Mary to save her from the calamity of death? But as the cheerleader for the Holy Baritone Chorus, Matthew is not done yet. He rather tellingly, to my mind at least, mentions that while Joseph married Mary, he declined to consummate the marriage until after the troublesome child was born. Why does Matthew feel the need to tell us this? Well, one of the pervading themes of the Holy Baritone voice is an over-preoccupation with genital penetration. Inappropriate penetration, that is, who puts what where, provokes the patriarchal fear of spiritual contamination. As today's conservative obsession with the restriction of women's reproductive and homosexual and transgender rights demonstrates, this preoccupation continues to be a story older than time. So let's listen again to Matthew's voice. When Joseph awoke from sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took her as his wife, but had no marital relations with her until she had borne a son, and named him Jesus. Although Joseph did as he was commanded, I wonder what he really felt. Amen.